This is Mae Warren. It's tape two with Taylor Cole on December 30th, 1996 in Blacksburg, Virginia. We're talking about Dave Futch.
Yes.
And you're saying that he came because
of he came while, Dad, when Dad first came to Lexington, I think it was generally acknowledged that one of the things that were distinguishing were the very distinguished faculty that came during his tenure there, of whom Dr. Futch was one of them. And Dr. Futch, bless his heart, never fails to remember my father whenever we meet, and that's always fun. I appreciate him doing that.
Well, he's very happy to be at Washington and Lane. He couldn't ask for a faculty member who's more devoted.
You know, there's the story about Dr. Futch. I don't know what's true or not, but he was not known for the neatest of desk, and that somewhere at one point he had cleared off a few inches of papers, and there had been was an unopened letter there offering him the chairmanship of some history department somewhere that was dated, a year previously. Back in the early 70s, and I'm sure you've heard this, Dr. Futch has requirements that you do not come to his class without a tie. And if you are a woman, you come in a skirt. And he was adamant. You did not come into the classroom. And many students would bring a lady guest with them. And if they had on a skirt, they could stay. But as far as ties were concerned, you didn't dare come into his class without a tie. Well, back in the early 70s, fashion was just whatever struck your fancy on that particular day. And Dr. Futch kept several ties, all of the 2-inch variety, back in his office. And if you came in a t-shirt, you went back there and got one of those ties and you wore it.
With the t-shirt.
With the t-shirt. So he was an important fixture at Washington and Lane. Certainly while I was there.
One of the more important traditions that we haven't mentioned at all is the honor system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hope it is as strong now as it always has been. I know that there have been a lot of pressures on honor systems throughout the country. I think they've compromised their honor system at UVA, which was the model for so many around the country also. I know that when I was at Duke, in the business school, there was no honor system there. And myself and another very, very fine woman named Edie Dietz, I forget what her last name is now, she's married, and I drew up an honor system that was modeled on Washington and Lee's, and it was very important to us down there. You can't go to Washington Lee, at least, growing up there as I did and being a student there without that being one of the things that you always carry with you. At least I hope most of the people do. I know I certainly do. I'm very proud of a lot of the decisions I've made since graduating that were influenced by that and have probably helped me a lot in accomplishing what little I have accomplished. And I'm very proud of growing up in a tradition like that. When my freshman year, a fraternity brother of mine, Pledge, at the Doubt House, was accused of an honor violation in a paper he wrote. It was a plagiarism case. In a lot of people's minds, it was a fairly minor plagiarism case. It went the full course, right down to the trial with the law students, and he was expelled, whatever the terminology is, and I think that had a huge impact. I know it did on the people in our house. I think it can be safely say that as traumatic as that era was, in so many different ways, of the things that remained intact, it was the adherence to the honor code there. free exams was never in question. While we were there, which was something that I was always amazed about, and still am, and I assume it still is, that they have open exams. Gosh, what a wonderful, wonderful tribute to that institution that they are able to maintain that type of self. Imposed, student-imposed expectation. I mean, that in my mind is one of the greatest hallmarks of Washington and Lee to this day. Mighty important.
Well, it sure seems to be. And then my last question is the big change, co-education. What was your stand then, and what's your stand now?
that's interesting, and I can answer that by relaying a story to you. 1986, I had a young lady. I was in North Carolina at the time. I had a young lady. Indicate she was interested in going to Washington. This is a year after the co-education. And had absolutely fantastic credentials. She was at the North Carolina School of Science and Math, top student, was a star tennis player. Family was, very well connected and prominent. Every expectation that this was going to be a top-notch candidate. And I did what you do when you sponsor somebody like that. Wrote all the appropriate letters and set up the interview, and Van Pate, who was just a wonderful friend of mine, was in the admissions office then. And which is a whole nother set of stories. But she went to Wash, came up for the interview, got the tour, came back, said, "Oh man, she loved it, thought it was great." Her mother comes in to see me later. Really kind of flushed, because they had put everything on this woman going to Washington and Lee. She got waitlisted. I mean, straight A's. North Carolina School of Science and Math, which is I didn't know what to say. I didn't think of any question. Had that woman been a man applying when I went to Washington and Lee, no question. Absolutely no question whatsoever. She was hitting on all cylinders. So I called Van Pate. I said, "Van, there's been an awful mistake. This young lady didn't get it. She got waitlisted." And Van said, "Yeah, she did, and she looked good. She's a good waitlist candidate." And I'm like, "Whoa, what has happened?" And he said, "That's the way it is right now." He said, "It has gotten that tough." I say that in answer to your question about co-education because I think, like so many people, you know, tradition, we hated to see all the tradition that is associated with being an all-male institution not continue. Then I heard that, you know, the university had become so much stronger academically by going co-ed that its, you know, graduates were being seen as being so much stronger that I couldn't get beyond that. My dad and I talked about it because he was still alive at the time. And I was very happy that I didn't get hung up in the tradition thing and that I was able to go to, you know, this is really in the best interest of the university, and by golly damn, here's proof, mm-hmm. You know. And which was very much the way he would have looked on it, I think. And
What did he say when you talked to him about it?
My recollection is discussing the merits of going co-ed, what will happen to the university if it goes. We didn't spend an awful lot of time on tradition. Can the university afford it? I remember having that discussion with him. Of course, I was, right out of business school and was in banking then, how are the alumni, as if I wasn't a part of them, how are the alumni going to react to this? And, I think, and maybe I got to be careful about saying this, but I think relative to the decisions that he had to make, it was a big decision, but this one was so clearly the right decision to make for all the bottom line reasons I think he looked on it that way. I think Dad's biggest concern about the whole thing was whether the university could afford it. And obviously, it's been able to do that and had a very successful capital campaign. It took somebody like John Wilson to do that, and I admire him for being able to do it, because he was really, that's not something that had the national attention, I guess. It did, I take it back, but wasn't a national cause the way that integration thing was. And again, I have to be very careful because that is not my place to draw those conclusions. I was far and away separated from both of those decisions. So for me, these are just my reflections of it. And
that's what I'm at?
I'm very uncomfortable. I got to say this. I'm very uncomfortable in making comparisons between, the difficulty of a decision that one man made and another man did.
I understand that.
Yeah.
We won't make that comparison.
Okay.
But you brought that issue up. I'd like to finish up by going back to the end of your father's administration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why did he leave?
Washington and Lee, and again, there are people in Lexington who can give you a heck of a lot better history of what the university was like at that time and what the challenges that my father faced. Frank Parsons obviously jumps because he was there and everything that was done, Frank was a party to and an influence and confidant and everything else. And Dad Vey Frank's input tremendously, as he did Frank Gillum's and Dean Pusey and Laybourne and all of them. I mean, that was an extraordinary group of people that were there during my father's time. Extraordinary talent. I'm sure every administration says that about their own time, but some of those people were legends. Dean Gillum, in particular, Lee McLaughlin in the athletic area. Dr. Laybourne. Gosh, Dr. Laybourne. And Jim Whitehead. Didn't even mention Mattingly. I'm sure his name has popped up a time or two during your. What a fascinating gentleman he was. And I was quite young when he passed away. And, I mean, he cut a wide swath. I remember when Mr. Mattingly's around, you are on your best behavior. Very nice man. But Dad, Washington Lee, went through the integration thing, and then it was coming into. There are those that would say that Dad helped Washington and Lee take the steps that were so important for a university from an academic sense to what it is today. Each president has their particular role and their particular set of challenges. And Dad's, it seems, he has been judged as the one who did the most for the faculty, did the most for the faculty's standard of living, did the most to improve the faculty, to bring in really top-notch talent. And the process of, the things that you would expect someone who had been the dean of the academic dean at Tulane to do, the dean of the college. When Dad got to Lexington, that was his mandate, in my opinion. You run an institution like Washington and Lee with the pressures that come from making momentous decisions, from having to do the obligatory fundraising, to meet the expectations of alumni, many of whom still hadn't forgiven the university for dropping subsidized athletics, much less the other momentous things that had come along. He did all that, and then he undertook a fairly in-depth self-study program that is mentioned. Frank can certainly tell you more about it because he was very involved in that. I remember Dad, during the last couple of years he was there, bringing home manuals. And that was really tough. I mean, you're trying to reshape a institution which is very much tied in true tradition in an old-fashioned kind of sense. And, they got through it, and all of the changes were made, and I think he made it possible for, the next agenda items, which were so important, which Dr. Huntley saw to, his capital campaign, and then with John Wilson and coeducation, and then he had a significant capital campaign. But I think the I remember going to one of the Founders Day. Not Founders Day. I think it was an alumni address that John Wilson gave at Lee Chapel. And at the beginning of his address, he mentioned those who had laid the foundation. He mentioned specifically my father as having laid that foundation. And I think I think any time you you do those things, it takes a lot out of you. Dad's health probably was not quite as good back in the late 60s either. You alluded to the fact that no one ever saw him without a cigarette. And that took a real toll on him. His years in Washington, he was sick a good bit of the time. And then in Chapel Hill, the same time. Although they had some wonderful years in Chapel Hill, and they loved it down there. I don't smoke. I all those things, I think, had a role in it. You know, they say that university presidents, if you can last, 5 or 6 years, you've done well. And Dan, was there 8 years. So that's, that was pretty good. John Wilson, I think he was, 10?
Mm-hmm.
10. Dr. Huntley started in 1968. So he made it 12 years.
68,
83. Oh, was it? Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it was all of that. And plus, Dad also, as my mother said, Dad's greatest desire in life was to be an academic. Administration was a little bit of a far cry from that, And teaching was, he loved teaching. I think Bob Huntley continued to carry a teaching load while he was president. I think Dad would have liked to have done that, but the administration was such a large piece of it. So that was kind of a far cry from what he, I think, really wanted to do. Dad was always very scholarly, which was, for somebody whose grammar wasn't particularly good, was kind of tough growing up. Apparently, growing up, their mother and father had been pretty strict on them about that. All of my uncles have said that. My uncle Taylor, first paper I wrote for business school, he wanted to see it. Whew, boy, that was a mistake. All of the numbers were there on my business paper, but boy, he sure didn't like the way I put the words together. And but Dad had other interests, and working on improving libraries was significant to him. And it's interesting that you're here in Blacksburg, because over here at the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center, there is a company called VTLS, which stands for Virginia Tech Library Systems. And they have computer programs which have essentially made the Dewey Decimal System obsolete. And you're probably more aware of this than I am. But that was when Dad left Washington Lee in 67. That's what he went to work on through the Council on Library Resources. And what we have over there is a direct result of the work that Dad started doing through us. Of course, Ms. Brown at the university was an associate of my father's at the Council on Library Resources. And,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, yes. And they were doing some very significant work in libraries, which Dad found tremendously rewarding, and was how he wanted to end his career. Yeah. So,
well, that's an interesting way to come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've come to the end of my questions. Do you have anything you'd like to say to summarize? Anything we didn't, anything I didn't ask about that I should have?
No, the only thing I would say is that for me and my family, Lexington and the people in Lexington, all of them, I mean, Washington and Lee and others, have just had the most profound influence on our lives that, you know, I look on it and say it was absolutely the best thing that ever happened to us. And to me in particular, I can't get away from it. I mean, I look for every opportunity that I can.
Including opportunities you don't really have.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm, if anybody ever asked me to get re-involved in the fraternity, I'll probably turn them down. That was...
No, I'm talking about today, heading to Lexington.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, there are worse things than having to drive up and down the valley on a pretty spring-like day at the end of December.
It's true. I felt that way as I got in the car in Lexington.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, actually, this is a real thrill for me. Anytime I can talk about Lexington and Lexington people, I will jump at the opportunity to do it.
Well, I'm real glad Frank sent me down here. He said I'd have a good time. He was right.
Well, I hope I've given you what you needed. Now I understand that I need to get you some pictures of.
I want family pictures.
Yeah.
I want some more personal stuff. I like what I see here.
Yeah, those are all the formal things, and I don't think you're going to find too much different in there. But the articles, I think you will.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going through them. Thank you, Tim. Mm-hmm.